Thank you for joining me. I'm Kimberly Rogers, and you're listening to this week's Torah portion from Friday sundown to Saturday sundown. This message is brought to you by themessianicmessage.com. themessianicmessage.com. I hope that you enjoy this teaching. Thank you for joining me. This week's Torah portion is called Mishpatim. The Torah portion is Exodus 21, starting at verse 1 to 24, 18. The Haftarah is Jeremiah 33, verses 25 and 26, and chapter 34, verses 8 to 22. The Brit Hadashah is Matthew 5, verses 33 to 48, and Matthew 17, verses 1 to 11. Before we get started, let's say a word of prayer. Baruch atah Yehovah Eloheinu Melech Haolam. Thank you, Abba, for all that you do for your people. And I thank you for your Torah and for your Sabbath. Thank you for allowing me to teach your word. And I just pray that whatever I say that comes from me that is not of you, it would just fall by the wayside and die. And that only those words that come from you would bless your people. Bless all your people all over the world today who are keeping your Sabbath. Bless all your people everywhere in Yeshua's name. Amen. The Mishpatim in this Torah portion means justice, and it also means judgments. But, you know, these Mishpatim seem like common sense in some instances, and in others, of course, we just don't understand them. We don't seem to have a clue about them. In particular, the Hebrew servant and the male and the female Hebrew servant issue there has a lot to do with the honor and shame of the person. Where the Hebrew servant is concerned, you know, the man gets to keep his honor. He gets to get his honor restored. So, the Torah has a lot to say about the honor of individuals within the culture because we're a royal priesthood. And so, a lot of these Mishpatim has to do with the honor of the individual. And I've been studying honor and shame with Rico, and now I'm beginning to see that a lot of our commandments have to do with us honoring each other. And in regard to us being a royal priesthood, you can't have a royal priesthood if you have a bunch of members who are dishonored in some way. Yes, they have to be able to fix their problems and make restitution, but they have to be able to have their honor restored to them. And one of the things that I want to point out to you is that the Hebrew people of the 10 tribes of Israel that are still in exile, in the Assyrian exile, we are living in a state of shame. We are still waiting to get our honor restored back to us. Now, in the situation with the female servant, she has to have her honor maintained throughout. I mean, she doesn't get to have her honor dropped and to be shamed, meaning to be without a covering, because females are so important for the continuation of the nation. Now, In taking care of this Hebrew slave, the master involved has to also have his honor retained, and he gets to retain his honor by keeping that which belongs to him, you know, that which was obtained by the servant in the master's household. What are those things? Those are the wife and children, because they were obtained in his household. So you can't dishonor the master of a servant, you know, when you are restoring the honor of the slave by setting him free, you see. And, you know, because that would not be just. Now, when the slave says that he wants to stay with the master, he, of course, gets to, that is also a form of restoring honor. But it also makes him a bond servant now, not just a servant for hire. And there's a difference, as I've taught in the past, between a servant for hire and a bond servant. So, one of two ways the man gets to get his honor restored. One is he gets to be set free after 6 years, or at the end of the 6 years, he gets to become part of the master's household, which is also a position of honor. Now let's take a look at Exodus 21:1, and says, "Now these are the judgments which you shall set before him, them." The Lord is talking to Moses. "You, Moses, shall set before them the congregation." The word there is ha-mishpatim. It's hey, mem, shin, pei, tet, yod, mem, sofit. And it literally means the judgments. It also has to do with litigation and vindication and punishment. And as I said before, justice. So these are the Lord's rules for judgments and justice. Now, the Ten Commandments are the Constitution, and this Torah portion comes on the heels of Yitro, the Torah portion where we are given the Ten Commandments. Those Ten Commandments, that Constitution, and this set of laws are the basis for the covenant. And this Constitution is the framework within which the Lord's justice will be meted out. Now, these are the justices here in Mishpatim, or the just things that we are to do to and for each other, that provide each other with the justice that we need in order to maintain the correct and proper balance within the culture. And it is from these principles that judgments are made by judges. You know, they make their interpretations on judgments that of issues that come up from these laws here. For example, here's a principle. It says in here that if you find your neighbor's lost animal, that you are to return it. Well, in practice, it would be that, you know, whatever you find of your neighbor's, that anything that's lost, you are to return it. You know, because the principle or the spirit of the law is what brings life to the law. You know, Paul talked a lot about the spirit of the law and the letter of the law. If you want to take just the letter of the law, then, you know, let's go over there to chapter 23. And it says there, if you, in verse 4, if you meet your enemy's ox or his ass going astray, you shall surely bring it back to him. Well, really? If it's just an ox or a donkey, you're just, or a mule, you're just supposed to, that's all that, you know, I mean, if you find his sheep, you know, you don't have to return that. Is that what we're going to say there? No, no, because we understand that these laws, these ways of doing justice to each other has a principle behind them that can be expanded on to include everything that your neighbor lost, you're to return it. And I'm going to point out some other principles in Mishpatim that regulate the way that we do justice to each other in just a little bit. So again, these are behavior regulations for interaction between ourselves. And each one of these mishpat is how we justly live out the Ten Commandments that were given in the previous chapter, those commandments that constitute our Constitution, because they are the legal basis upon which the kingdom is built. And so we need to be careful about making sure that we always do justice. You know, the Lord has determined that there is a proper way to treat your Hebrew brother or sister, as I was talking about earlier, you know, when they are in trouble and have to sell themselves into servitude, there's a proper way. You know, they've been oppressed and they're shamed now because they have gotten themselves into some kind of trouble and they need you to help them out. And by the way, one of the ways we're going to find out in this Torah portion that somebody can get into trouble is if they've been a thief. And they get caught and they need to make restitution and they can't make restitution. They sell themselves. There's an actual commandment regarding that. And so they're in a position of shame. But being a servant and having that opportunity to make restoration is how we can restore our honor. So Mishpatim then, the Mishpat, these Mishpatim, these justices, is closely related with righteousness. In fact, Mishpat and Tzedakah, justice and righteousness, go hand in hand throughout Scripture. And so let's take a further look at the Hebrew servant. Verse 2, it says there, if you buy a Hebrew servant, 6 years he shall serve, and in the seventh year he shall go free for nothing. And in verse 7, it says, if a man sell his daughter to be a maid servant, she shall not go out as the men servants do. So let's take a look first and understand that these are Hebrew servants. They are not Gentile servants. Why is that? Well, these commandments were given within just a few weeks of the Hebrews having come out of Egypt. As a matter of fact, I believe that it's 2 or 3 months. I would have to go back and look at that. But it's not a very long time since they came out of Egypt. And that's important for us to understand because in that short amount of time, when they came out of Egypt, there was a mixed multitude that came out with them. But this commandment here applies only to Hebrew servants. Why is that? It's because that mixed multitude attached themselves to the children of Israel when they came out of Egypt, and once they did that, they became Hebrews. There is no such thing as a Gentile in the Lord's kingdom. But there are strangers. There are those Gentiles who can live among you. They're called strangers. But the Lord does not have Hebrews as members of his nation. Strangers are not members of his nation. They are people who live among you. So when you are a Gentile and you attach yourself to the Hebrews, you become a Hebrew. That's the whole point of being a child of Abraham. Abraham was the first Hebrew. And so now you're attaching yourself to the Hebrew nation. You become a Hebrew by adoption. And that's what all those mixed multitude were. They were adopted into that culture. And now the Lord doesn't have to say if you buy a Hebrew servant or a Gentile servant. Nope. It's only if you buy a Hebrew servant because everybody there standing at Mount Sinai was a Hebrew. That's why you don't have some laws for Hebrews and some laws for Gentiles, because there was not a Gentile that stood before the Lord at Mount Sinai. Let's go down to chapter 22, verse 1. It says, if a man shall steal an ox or a sheep and kill it or sell it, he shall restore 5 oxen for an ox and 4 sheep for a sheep. Now, the distinction here is between the labor value of an ox and a sheep. You know, ox can carry loads and pull loads and plow fields, and they are very good for laborious tasks. But sheep give wool, and that's really all about, that's just about all that sheep are good for, is giving wool. Sometimes they give a little milk. You know, the Lord is, putting a greater value on the animal that can do more for you, you see, and less value on the animal that does less for you. And in verse 2, it says, if a thief be found breaking up and be smitten that he die, there shall be no bloodshed for him. In other words, you know, if he's breaking into your house and you kill him, you're not going to be charged with any kind of crime for having done so. If the sun be risen upon him, there shall be blood shed for him, for he shall make full restitution. If he have nothing, then he shall be sold for his theft. This is the guy that I told you earlier that needs to make restitution, but he doesn't have anything to do it with, so he now is forced into becoming a Hebrew servant in order to pay the restitution. You see? Verse 4, if the theft be certainly found in his hand alive, whether it be ox or ass or sheep, he shall restore double. Now, this is different here because in verse 1, you see the animals have been killed or sold. Here, the animal is found alive. And the restoration is then just double. If he stole one, he restores that one plus two. And if he stole two, he returns two and doubles it, making it four. You see, so the difference is in the math. You know, if the animals are alive, then double restitution is enough. But see, if they've been killed or sold, there is no animal to, you know, return back to its master to which another animal can be added, you see. So there has to be an arbitrary penalty involved for killing and selling a stolen animal, you see. If a man deliver to his neighbor an ass or an ox or a sheep or any beast to keep it and it die or be hurt or driven away, no man seeing it, then shall an oath of the Lord be between them both that he has not put his hand to his neighbor's goods, and the owner of it shall accept thereof, and he shall not make it good. No blame is imputed to the man who is overseeing his neighbor's animal if something beyond his control happens to it. But he does have to take an oath to the Lord that says that this is the case. And, you know, taking an oath to the Lord is a very big deal. And so you don't want to be making an oath to the Lord when you know you're lying about what you're saying to the Lord. Verse 12, and if it be stolen from him, he shall make restitution to the owner thereof. And if it be torn in pieces, then let him bring it for witness, and he shall not make good that which was torn. If it was stolen, how would you know it was stolen? Well, because you would have the evidence, you would have the thief. And, you know, if it was stolen, then you have to make restitution to the owner thereof, and it would be probably, my understanding of this is that it would actually be the thief that would make the restitution, not the neighbor from whom it was stolen. You see what I'm saying? And if it was torn in pieces, then it would be for a witness. You would take the pieces and say that, you know, this was beyond my control. Because, you know, things happened to animals and, you know, you can't be with animals every moment. Something can come along and eat your animals. So this is something that would be common knowledge. If I was taking my ox to my neighbor's house, I would understand that, you know, there's a chance of an animal coming along to his house, just like there's a chance of an animal coming along to my house. The danger to the animal is the same, whether it's at my house or your house, you see. And so if it happens when your neighbor is taking care of it, he doesn't owe you anything. And so, verse 16, if a man entice a maid that is not betrothed and lies with her, he shall surely endow her to be his wife. But if her father utterly refuse to give her to him, he shall pay money according to the dowry of virgins. Again, this is the protection of the honor of the females, who are responsible for bringing the children into the nation. Verse 18, you shall not suffer a witch to live, according to the King James. You know, some versions say a sorceress, female, but the word there is a kashaf, and it means someone who whispers a spell. I can tell you that men whisper spells as well. Even though the word there may be feminine, let me go to that word there, Exodus 22:18, and we'll look in the interlinear, and we'll see what the interlinear has to say there. You shall not suffer a witch. And it is a feminine ending there, ending with the hay, makes it a feminine ending, but it doesn't mean that it applies only to the women, because anybody who is caught whispering a spell will be put to death. Why? What did the Lord have against, whispering spells? Well, in the Gentile temples and in the worship of their gods, that's what they do. They do sorcery and incantations. They call on their deities, in spells in order to manipulate them. And not only are we not to be doing that to other gods, but we are certainly not to be doing it to our Elohim, are we? Exodus 22:19, whoever lies with a beast shall surely be put to death. Earlier I said that there were some instances of categories of crimes against the Torah here that I was going to show you that the principles, we need to look at the principles and apply those principles. And here we have this one. It is a class of sexual misconduct. Now, lying with a beast is the most abominable sexual misconduct, along with homosexuality. Homosexuality is an abomination, and so is having sex with a beast. But the principle here is that by mentioning the worst of the crimes in this category, that all of the other ways that you could commit sexual misconduct become all-inclusive in this one when you mention the worst of it. So you mention the worst of it, and everybody understands that it covers the whole gamut. Do you see what I'm saying? Now, later on in the Torah, the Lord will elucidate and detail these laws of sexual misconduct. But we're looking at the Mishpatim here, the judgments and the justices, the way that we are to live our lives in justice, and understanding that the principle of them is as or more important than the letter of the law, you see. In verse 20, it says, "He that sacrifices to any god save to the Lord only, he shall be utterly destroyed." So here we also have a category of how not to worship the Lord. Later on, we'll see some other commandments on how to worship and how not to worship the Lord. And the penalty here, see, the Lord gives us the penalties for these right within the commandments. We don't have to guess. We know that when we do this, that the penalty for it is automatic death. One of the things that we tend not to understand in our Christian doctrine is that when you commit a crime and there is a penalty for it, that you can be forgiven for the crime, but the consequence of the penalty consequence remains. You know, we are often taught in Christianity that the consequences go away, and that is not so. The consequences remain even though there can be forgiveness. And that's a hard one for people to wrap their brains around, because they want to be able to, you know, commit the sin and then say, "I'm sorry," and have the consequences of the sin go away. That's not how it works. Just thought I'd throw that in there for good measure. Exodus 22, verse 21. "You shall neither vex a stranger nor oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt." And that's going to be repeated again in Exodus 23, verse 9. It's very important to the Lord that we not oppress anyone. People who are strangers to us are not to be oppressed. In fact, in verse 22, it says, you know, don't afflict a widow or an orphan. If you afflict them and they cry out at all to me, I will hear their cry, and I will come after you with the sword, and your wives will be widows and your children will be fatherless. The Lord does not take kindly to oppressing others. We need to be careful how we treat those who are less fortunate than we are, like strangers. Why are strangers considered less fortunate than we are? Because they are strangers. They are still Gentiles, even though they're living among us. Now, if they want to get, you know, circumcised and come into the covenant and say, you know, with their mouth, make the confession that, you know, Yeshua is their God, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, Yehovah is their Lord, then, you know, then they become adopted and they're no longer strangers. Now they're on equal status with you, see, because they're in that parity covenant with you. But if they are strangers, they're not blessed to be a Hebrew, are they? And widows and orphans, even though they may or may not be Hebrews, you know, they are less fortunate because they have no covering or protection. You see, there's honor in having a covering and having protection. And so the Lord makes up for their lack of their protection and their covering and their provision. He makes up for that. And I can testify to that as a widow, that the Lord makes up for what I lost when my husband died. And, you know, no one has the right to oppress me or afflict me in any way, because I am under the Lord's protection. You know, we need to be careful about how we treat others. Now, we're going to skip down to Exodus 24, verse 4. I'm going to let you go ahead and, you know, I know this is kind of short. Let you go ahead and, you know, study these. laws that we're to live by. But I want to bring out something here. It says in chapter 24, verse 4, and Moses wrote all the words of the Lord. Now, one of the things that we have going on in the Hebrew Roots community is people saying, well, Moses didn't write that, you know, that there were other people that wrote that stuff, and, you know, and it was put in there later after the Babylonian captivity and all kinds of nonsense. It says here, and Moses wrote all the words of the Lord. Let me explain something to you. You either believe this or you don't. And truthfully, some people don't. And they leave the Hebrew Roots community. They leave Christianity. They leave the Lord. They go off to do their own thing. They get into the New Age movement or become Buddhists or whatever else they want to do, because they don't believe that Moses wrote all these words. And so they don't have anything to hang their faith on. Well, you know, you have to determine whether you believe that Moses wrote all the words of the Lord or not. And so it says here, and he rose up early in the morning, and he built an altar under the hill. Under what hill? He built an altar at the base of Mount Sinai. See, they were still at Mount Sinai. He went up when the children of Israel said, you know, Moses, we can't take hearing the Lord. Can you imagine? We have here, you know, quite a few more things that the Lord had to say to that congregation beyond just the first 10 commandments of the Constitution that he got out. You know, once he got the Constitution out, he probably took a pause there, and the children of Israel had a moment to say to Moses, wow, you know, we can't take this. We're going to, you know, let you go talk with the Lord, and we'll, whatever you say, that's what we'll do. You know, so they made Moses their mediator. See? And so Moses went, and he got these words. Okay, he got these commandments from the Lord. And he comes back down to the base of the mountain, and he builds an altar under the hill, and he reads these to the children of Israel, because it says in the beginning of this Torah portion, go tell them this. And so he went and told them, and he built 12 pillars. Why? Because there are 12 tribes. This was all inclusive of the 12 tribes. Now, one of the things we need to understand is that these constitute the covenant. The Ten Commandments of the Constitution and all of these commandments, these mishpatim that were given to Moses, constitute the Mosaic Covenant. And we're gonna see that that these pertain to all of the people, but the Lord is going to give additional laws. Truthfully, right here, you can make the case that technically this is the Torah right here. These mishpatim, these are the laws. But then the Lord comes along and he gives some laws concerning the tabernacle. And he gives some that concern the priesthood only. And he gives some that are just for Nazarites, and some that are just for lepers, and some that are just for women who experience their monthly cycle, and some for women who are experiencing childbirth, you see. And so what the Lord has done here in this section is he has given the laws that pertain to everyone equally. Then we're going to go ahead, and he's going to add the laws which are part of the Torah, but they pertain only to the tabernacle, only to the land, only to the priesthood, and so forth. You see what I'm saying? So, but this right here is the covenant for the entire nation. You see, there's the priesthood has it hit their covenant with the Lord. You see, we're going to learn about that. And the tabernacle, the building of the tabernacle, that's a special thing and a special covenant with the Lord. And so we're here getting the covenant that's for the entire nation. And so Moses comes down from the hill, from Mount Sinai, builds the altar at the base of Mount Sinai, puts up the 12 pillars to represent the 12 tribes of Israel. And it says here, and he sent young men of the children of Israel, which offered burnt offerings and sacrificed peace offerings of oxen to the Lord. And Moses took half of the blood and put it in basins, and half of the blood he sprinkled on the altar. And he took the book of the covenant. What is this book of the covenant? This is what he got, these Mishpatim, written down on Mount Sinai when he was up with the Lord getting these commandments. And he read them in the audience of the people, and they said, all that the Lord has said we will do and be obedient. And so he then sprinkles. Let's go over here. I'm going to go to chapter 24. And Moses took the blood, this is verse 8, and sprinkled it on the people and said, behold the blood of the covenant which the Lord has made with you concerning all these words. And so what was going on here, you'll remember that the children of Israel in chapter 19, when the Lord said to Moses, would you find out, do they want to, you know, like get married and stuff? And Moses was going back and forth and being the wedding mediator, they said, you know, we will marry you and we will do what you tell us to do. We will obey and do. Remember that? Well, here we are in Exodus 24, verse 7, and they are repeating their oath. You know, when you stand at the altar getting married, the preacher says, here are all the things that you have to do if you're going to be married. And at the end of all of that list of, you know, honor and obey and respect and all of the things that they say, what you say is, you know, I do. I will do that and I will obey those vows. Well, this is the people's taking the vow. See, before, when Moses asked them, they said, yeah, we'll do that. But now, the vows have been read to them, and now they are saying, okay, we are going to do this, we will be obedient. And then, that's when Moses sprinkles the blood of the sacrifices that were made to the Lord, he sprinkles that on the people. And that is the seal of the covenant. It's the blood of the covenant. And so there we have the bookends of the I wills, you know, that the people said to the Lord. Now, the Lord has given us here at the end of days, the ability to understand this entire constitution and the codification of the law under the constitution, and to understand what that means to be the covenant. You know, for the last 2,000 years, believers did not really understand what they were doing. And that's why we've come to a point now where people are beginning to wake up, because there's been something wrong. And I thank my brother Rico for all the work that he has done in the ancient Near East covenants, honor and shame and righteousness and justice, in helping us to understand just how critical this is to our walk with the Lord. Because you can't have a nation of people unless you have laws for those people to live by. And so we are here at the end of days, and I really truly believe we're at the end of days, and we need to learn how to conduct ourselves in the nation that the Lord is bringing with him when he returns, you see. And we are blessed. This is a blessing. People say this is a burden, but truthfully, this is a blessing. I am so happy to be able to know how to serve the Lord the way he wants to be served. And, you know, it just takes a paradigm shift. It takes a shift in your heart, to understand that the Lord is holy, and how we treat each other and how we serve him is exactly the same, and that it's all codified and laid out for us in simple and easy to understand instructions. And if we understand the principles of the Mishpatim, of the judgments, of the justice that he wants us to do for him and for each other, if we understand that, if the principles or the spirit of it, then, you know, the nation will be a happy nation. We will begin to come together as a people by doing these things. Well, I pray that this Torah portion has been a blessing to you, and I wish you a Shabbat Shalom.